Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You boys like Mexico?
I'm as bad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore.
Welcome back, everybody. Taxation is theft, and I have with me today Jay Love, who is a self-governed individual, and we're gonna be talking about some really interesting things about traveling, the right to travel, not requiring a license, and being able to travel freely in your car all over the place. So welcome.
Hey, thank you. I'm excited to be here and share my experiences about a decade of free traveling experiments.
Awesome. So let's kind of start off with, you know, how were you raised, and was this always a part of your life, or, you know, what was your early life like, and how did you kind of discover this lifestyle?
Well, it came about eventually, but definitely my childhood plays somewhat of a role, because I was raised in a fundamentalist religious organization where we were taught very strongly that God's law was above man's law. Many of us were homeschooled. We didn't really have any indoctrination into statism. So, you know, that perspective was ingrained into me at a very young age, and very heavily. It didn't have a lot of depth in that way, but they were not violent people in that way. They were brainwashing type people, but it definitely was not an environment where you were taught that, you know, you have to pay taxes and you have to do these things this way. And we kind of took care of ourselves and each other as much as possible. So, basically when I got older and I eventually left the organization, like, I had never been taught how to, like, file taxes, or, like, you know, I didn't really know anything like that. So I just never did. Nice. And but what happened was, because they are so crazy brainwashed people, they actually teach you that if a parent leaves the organization with a child, that the other parent is supposed to do everything they can to go get that child back and bring that child back to the organization, or else, like, God will kill them, kind of thing, like, really horrible. So I knew that they were going to come after me after I left with my child. I didn't expect it to be quite so soon, so it did catch me a little bit off guard. And I did pretty much lose everything trying to keep my daughter, and I lost very easily. The judge did not care at all. My whole family, everybody I ever knew, basically testified against me. They all said the same exact story. The judge didn't even care that they were all coaching each other. It was pretty awful. And then eventually after that, they came after me for boatloads of child support. And I had already lost everything. My cars, like, I had nothing left. And I was just kind of living in my house, which was not too bad because the mortgage was so cheap. But, you know, I didn't know what else to do. And since I had no family, because I left that organization, I was all by myself. You know, the only option I could think of was to offer him my house in exchange for closing the child support case. So he did make like $80,000 off of selling my house, but he didn't formally close the child support case. And so eventually my license was suspended, and I just said, I ain't got nothing left, you guys. Like, fuck the system, and I'm out of here. I have to survive, and I have to keep driving, and... I just don't care. I just didn't look back. And so soon after that, I was in Montana, actually, from Florida. I went to go find my biological father, and that was the first time I got pulled over up there.
Wow. After that. So, okay, so this is a pretty interesting turn of events. So it sounds like you were raised in a system that would have advocated not having licenses, but then you were kind of pushed into it later because of some other events. Is that right?
Yeah, it was just like, it was very superficial, you know, like, you know, there's a lot of people that are very immature in their exploration of liberty, and that, like, you know, they only see, like, nonviolence as being don't punch me, you know, and so, you know, they were against war, but not against paying taxes, like, you know what I mean? Like, they wanted to be compliant, they just didn't want to personally, directly engage in violence, you know, so it was very, very superficial, but, so there was nothing like, don't get a license or anything like that. It was just like, you weren't really taught to, like,
I see,
be a statist, you know? Okay. So, yeah.
Okay. And then, so what's interesting is you were kind of, then forced into this way because you had your license suspended and you basically said, screw it, I need to go on anyway. What am I going to do? Which is, you know, this is an interesting, position that a lot of people are forced into. It's like, you know, the thing with, like, you know, you don't have enough money to pay for your vehicle registration this month, then you get stopped, and then they give you a ticket. Now you have to, you know, get the money for the ticket, and they continue to stop you and give you more tickets, and it just keeps adding up, and soon you just can't afford any of it. And they're like, just like, a lot of people at some point are just like, you know what, screw it.
Yeah.
And that really sucks, especially, like, because, you know, like the government does, they'll continue to escalate it. And a lot of times that ends up with your car in a junkyard, in a tow yard, and you can't get it out. And some people are just like, well, screw it, I'm not going to make the payments on my loan. And the bank gets pissed off, their credit goes to shit, and all this other stuff starts piling up. And yeah, it's really like people, and you know, it's the typical statist will say, well, why didn't you just pay your bills? And it's like, well, not everybody's got that, you know, that's the privilege talking, I guess. And it's like, once you start getting, once they get you, once they have that little hook in there, they just keep escalating it and making it worse and worse. So,
yes.
So you were kind of put in this position where you didn't have a license now, but you still had to travel. What was kind of your education from there? Did you just do it anyway and say, screw it, I'm going to break the law? Or did you start learning about free travel and right to travel and all this?
I just, at that point, I had just kept driving. And very soon after that, I learned about liberty. And like, I realized that everything that I felt inside had actual words and concepts, and it was amazing. And I got involved with local activism events and local We Are Change chapters in Florida, and I was led to attending Sovereign Seekers meetings that were private. Basically, you had to be invited. It was at a restaurant banquet room, but there was like a good 30 to 40 people at those meetings, and they were hardcore. And I just went to several of those and learned some basics and terminology. And I was like, wow, this is really, that's how I feel. I do believe that I, you know, am the best, you know, decision maker for my own life. And you know, that this is kind of like an illusion. Since I had never been indoctrinated into statism, it wasn't very hard for me to be like, yeah, this is all bullshit, like, this is all pretty much imaginary that just showed up you know, some few years ago, basically, in the history of humankind, that we have all of these this system that we're living in to this degree. And so, you know, I did it, but also, like, there's this thing that, like, what you're talking about, the escalation, if you have the license, you have already agreed to abide by those rules. And so when I first got pulled over in Montana, you know, that was my first clue that, like, being in a different state, they didn't seem to really care that my license was suspended. I didn't ask. I got out of that one pretty easily. So I was just like, all right, peace, I'm out of here. But, like, now that I think about it, and even then, I was like, geez, did they even know that my license was suspended? Like, do they communicate? And now that it's been three times, I'm like, I don't think that they're going to look for that. Like, I just don't have a license here in New Hampshire. And my ticket was not having a license present.
Yeah, that's something really interesting that I found out is, you know, when you're stopped driving without a license, the consequences are much, much, you know, even if you don't know how to talk your way out of it and convince them that you don't need one and just say, yep, I'm guilty, I don't have a license, the punishment for that is much, much less than driving with a suspended license, which is really interesting. And you're right, it's because of that contract. And one thing that I point out to people, because it's kind of, it's a really implicit contract, but there are some parts of it that are very explicit. And I point this out to people when you go to get your license or you go to renew it and you look at the form at the bottom, you're waiving a lot of your Fourth Amendment rights and your Fifth Amendment rights, where, you know, it says you're basically agreeing to submit to alcohol tests.
Yep.
And so now you can't plead a fifth. You're not free from a search because they don't need probable cause anymore. They just need, well, you signed the contract. And actually, in some states, and in Texas, I talked to somebody who has a commercial driver's license. You know, when a cop stops you and they ask, where are you going? Where are you coming from? You don't have to answer any of those questions. But if you have a commercial license in Texas, you have to answer those questions. And that's pretty ridiculous. But those are terms of a contract.
So, yeah, absolutely.
So have you ever been stopped and had to assert, like, hey, I'm not driving, I'm traveling, those laws don't apply to me? Those, have you ever had those types of conversations, and could you kind of walk me through one of those and how that went down?
Yeah, absolutely. First, because it's quick, let me just say that, like, in Montana, I didn't really say anything like that. I was still, you know, I had went to some Sovereign Seekers meetings, but basically, you know, I took their silly tickets. I didn't even sign them under duress or anything like that, but I showed up at the arraignment, and when they asked me to plead, that's when I knew I had to do something, because I knew that at that point, that was also, like, you know, when you're pleading, you're pleading to your master. You know what I mean? So basically, when they asked me to plead, I was like, I can't do that. And so I just said, no, I'm exercising my right to free travel. And he was like, what? And I was like, I have the constitutional right to free travel. And he was like, okay, I'll toss the no insurance charge. I was like, all right. And then he's like, but you have to buy a license. And I said, but you just told me that I have the right to free travel. And so he asked for more time, and then I called back to check on the status, and they had tossed the whole thing because they pulled me over on private property.
Wow. Yeah, and so I've been in some cases like that, and I'm like, I've been, like, just shocked and, like, in surprise of, like, wait, okay, they just dismissed the case, that, like, it can't be because I said what I said. But whenever I tell those types of stories to people, they're like, oh, yeah, like, they don't want to admit that, you know, you have these rights. So they just find some strange arbitrary reason to dismiss the case, like saying, oh, well, it happened on private property. Because the reality is, like, they don't care if it's on private property. Like, especially, yeah. That's another thing. Like, you can be in court, you can be charged by police who are clearly, like, the police will sit there and admit, oh, yeah, we didn't have any probable cause, but we started searching his car anyway. And the judge, you would think, would say, oh, well, that's an illegal search. Unless you, the defendant, actually object and say that was an illegal search, the court is not going to do that for you.
No.
So for them to say, oh, well, I guess it was on private property, that's kind of like, well, let's not talk about this other subject. That's really interesting.
Yes, absolutely. They do not want to set a precedent that you can do, that this is a thing. They don't want everybody to know.
And this is what's interesting, too, because, you know, I talk to a lot of people about this. Hi. We've got, oh, he's not showing up on the split screen. Oh, there she goes. So, yeah, what's really interesting about this is whenever I talk about this, people are, you know, like, they're like, well, can you show me some Supreme Court law that says you have a right to travel and all this? And really, it's like, it's not that simple, because they're, you know, because of how you had your ticket dismissed, they're not going to allow this to be appealed and brought all the way up to really high courts, because, you know, they don't, because they know this is actually a strategy that's, you know, you can't just take a case to the Supreme Court and say, I want to go to the Supreme Court and argue that I have a right to travel. You can't just submit that. You need to go through a whole process, and that process has to be, you have to sue somebody and lose and go to an appellate court, or you have to be charged with a crime and lose and go to an appellate court, then the appellate court. Like, there's a whole process to it. And then you have to apply to the Supreme Court, and they have, you know, they have to decide whether or not they want to accept the case. These are, like, these are really all roadblocks that if you don't, and there are all kinds of games that they will play to, you know, they'll dismiss a charge like they did with yours to make sure that you can't go along this path so that these cases never get there. So that's really interesting to, it's a really difficult part for point for status to really understand. So Kevin's,
so that was like 9 years ago in Montana. And then the most interesting case was 7 years ago right here in New Hampshire. Just a few blocks away, I was pulled over in front of our anarchist nightclub, basically. Speaking of all the words and stuff, I was 7 months pregnant, and I made a right turn right in front of a cop car. And I was driving a car that had expired plates, and I didn't have a license. And, well, my license was suspended in a different state, right? And, so I pulled right in front of the door to the, Anarchy nightclub, and, two people came down and started filming. And so I was like, all right, I got this. And, you know, they come to the window and they says, can I see your license, registration, blah, blah. And I said, I don't have a license because I'm not driving, I'm traveling, I'm not engaging in any commercial commerce. And, you know, basically, you know, we went back and forth a little bit, kind of just saying the same thing. And they knew exactly what I was doing, those guys did, because they specifically said, oh, yeah, well, are you operating a motor vehicle? And I was like, no. You know? And, so they knew what I was, which I was surprised at that they even freaking knew. But, eventually, I refused to give them any information. And eventually when they threatened to cage me, I gave them my name under duress. They went and tried to look up my information. I refused to give them anything else but my name. The dispatch was rattling off my slave security number. I could hear it. But I refused to confirm it. And I was like, hey, I thought you guys were detectives, man. I gave you my name, you know? And basically, they gave me a ticket for no license, no insurance. I signed them under duress. And then they let me drive my car and park it. And, like, it was so bizarre. And so I was under the impression that I would need to file papers within 3 days that canceled those contracts. Now, since this arraignment 2 weeks ago, people have been telling me, no, it's supposed to be in a reasonable amount of time, it doesn't have to be 3 days, whatever. That's something new I've been learning. But I went down to the courthouse with paperwork that I got from a Quaker who gets pulled over every couple years, and he uses this paperwork, and they nolly prosy him. And I just took his name out, put my name in, and I filed that in 3 days to the court. And basically it was a copy of the Magna Carta. It was definitions of person and driver. and asking for proof of jurisdiction under the seven elements of jurisdiction, which one of them is that you have to verify that that is that person, which I don't think they really could do because I didn't confirm any of it, you know, and they didn't really try that hard even to figure it out. So I filed those papers, and then I went to the arraignment a couple weeks later, and when they asked me to plead there, you know, everybody's going guilty, not guilty, guilty, not guilty, and I stand up and I said, I asked you guys to prove that you have jurisdiction over me, and until somebody can prove that they're my creator or my master, I'm not pleading to anybody. And they just asked, they looked around, and they looked at each other, and they asked for more time. And then I called a couple weeks later to check, and they nulli procede it.
Yeah, they don't want to dismiss that in front of everybody else, right?
Yeah, and everybody turned around and looked at me, too. It was a pretty packed courthouse, so it was pretty funny. But, like, even the guy that gave me the papers was like, they're never going to let this go through. They're just going to tell you to go away. And, you know, then this time, you know, I was, like, on the highway, and so there was nobody filming, and I was just trying to get it together, and, you know, I didn't even turn on the camera. I just posted a message on Facebook. I was like, I'm getting pulled over, and I know some people knew that that was going to be an interesting thing, so, you know, they came up to the door, and, like, I thought my best way to go was be like, hey, guys, you know, 7 years ago, you guys pulled me over before. You judge told me to beat it, get lost. Like, I'm a self-governing individual. We've already been through this. Like, leave me alone. And, you know, I didn't want to get shot, so I'm trying to toe this line.
Right.
Of, like, you know, like, trying to not be their bitch and also not get shot. So, you know, I gave them all kinds of information, like, look, I'm cool, but, like, this is what I'm doing, and we've been through this before. That's how I went with it. And, you know, eventually they had me get out of the car, and I was like, all right, because I don't want them. That's when you get the problems that I've noticed, is if you refuse to get out of the car, then violence starts to happen. I'm like, you guys have guns. I'm going to get out of the car. You know, eventually they said, you're under arrest, and I told them, I don't acknowledge your authority, I don't consent to your system of violence, and I sat on the ground. So, they arrested me, and then, when I went to the station, I was just sitting at their desk with them, answering, they were filling out papers, and I was basically just talking about my life, and I'm like, this is how I live, like, I help people recover from drugs and trauma, and, like, you know, I haven't had any accidents, I don't drink, I don't speed, like, this is what I do. And, you know, then I found out that they charged me with resisting arrest, and I was like, oh, really, huh, and why is that? And he's like, well, because a uniform officer of the law told you that you were under arrest. And I said, but I told you that I don't acknowledge your authority. And then we just stared at each other, you know, for a minute. And the female cop that arrested me, eventually she gave me her token, hey, look, I'm just doing my job. Because I just kept right. talking about my life of helping people and being peaceful and positive. And, you know, eventually
she's like, sounds like you're doing a lot better to help this world than I am.
Yeah, right, right. I was just like, I'm just going to keep talking until you guys feel bad. You know, I don't know what else to do.
Wow.
But, I mean, it went okay, and, I mean, as far as that goes, and, you know, so, I thought I had to file paperwork, within 3 days, and I didn't have it on me or have a chance to get it there in that time, and, I got lots and lots of stuff to do that I had to decide was more important than, picking this particular battle at this point. I also don't have much support here in New Hampshire, and getting rides to court and getting rides to work, very, very difficult. So basically I went in there and just listened to what the prosecutor had to say, and amazingly, they did take notes about my life. He knew that I had my child taken away from me in family court, and that's how my license was suspended. He was like, I'm sorry that happened to you, but we've got people that were speeding that are going to end up paying more than you are to get out of here. He's like, so this is what I'm going to ask the judge. I'm going to ask the judge to reduce the resisting arrest from misdemeanor to a violation, reduce the fine from 620 to 124, and we're going to toss the license and the registry, license and misuse of plates charge. And I was using permanent Montana plates that actually belong to the car I had before the one I'm driving now. So I was like, what? And still, like, it wasn't even a driving on a suspended license. It was just a no license present. And so I was like, look, I have to get back to my life. And so, hey, you're going to have to go sit down, okay? That's too much. Go sit down. So, you know, I was like, yeah, I gotta go, but, like, so I was like, I have to keep driving, and so what happens next time? And he's like, oh, it'll be, like, the first time all over again, you know, because I don't have a valid license in this state. It's not that snowball escalation of compounding charges and, you know, all the stuff that gets people all screwed up in the system. And I was like, oh, really? Okay. Well, I mean, actually, you know, and I told him, I was like, I am not indoctrinated into this system and I don't agree with this stuff. So most of what you're saying to me, I don't even understand, but I'm pretty sure we both know what's really going on here, you know, because he was like, look, you just got to pay a little something for us to let you out of here. It's like, he's like, people that were speeding are paying more than you. I was like, all right, dude, whatever. So they let me out.
Sounds like a shakedown.
Yeah, for $124. And, you know, basically, there's still no record of me driving on a suspended license. And, you know, next time I get stopped, it'll be like the same thing all over again. So I did what I did that way. But because of the support that's been coming in all across the country, like, I feel way more confident about knowing more what to do, and I'm sure that if I needed rides, I could call people in different states that could help me get around with Uber or whatever, you know, because I was definitely considering, well, maybe I should get my license back because I have this child and I have all this stuff to do, but really, like, I want to keep her outside of the matrix anyway, so it would be even better if I could have a support system that could come and pick her up if I got pulled over, and also, you know, to teach her, like, this is what you have to do, you know, when people in these silly costumes trying to infringe on your rights. Because I know people that were, born with no slave security number, and they're in their 40s now, and so it is possible. They have never had a license.
And actually, I'm glad you know some of those people. I've actually been trying to find some, so if you could introduce me, I'd love to have them on the show and talk about some of that.
Yeah,
That's also, you know, very interesting. But so I want to ask, why did you have license plates at all? I would assume it's because you didn't want to be seen without license plates, because they usually create a problem out of that. But at the same time, they usually see a license plate and they assume, oh, that means that they have a contract with the state and I therefore have jurisdiction over that person. Just like, by virtue of that having a plate on it, it is a motor vehicle, and by virtue of any person behind the wheel inside of it, they are operating it.
Absolutely. Basically, I was given a Honda Civic from an activist that lives off the grid, that he escaped Vietnam. He really liked my work. He gave me a Honda Civic. It came with permanent Montana plates. The Honda Civic's not so good up here in New Hampshire. And eventually, someone else bought me a Subaru SUV, and he signed the title into the person who bought me the Honda Civic's name, and then he refused to register and tag it, which I was not actually expecting, but perhaps was a blessing, because then I just took one of the Montana plates, because it comes with two, I took one of them off the Honda Civic and put it on the Subaru. And so now I've got a suspended license in Florida and a permanent plate from Montana in New Hampshire. And if there is no, if this is really a thing where they don't communicate with other DMVs and that stuff doesn't matter to them, then the out-of-state plates and the out-of-state licenses are great, and I think that people that moved to New Hampshire for the Free State Project should try letting their license expire and not getting new plates or getting the Montana permanent plate.
Right.
You know, people move here and they're so excited. Look, I got my New Hampshire driver's license. And I've always been like, but why? Why even?
Like, I got my new slave papers.
Right. Like, why don't you try going without it? And, like, I didn't really realize that it was such a thing. But now after three times, like, I don't know if there are certain states that communicate with certain states' DMVs or if none of them do. I don't know.
I think there is some sort of system, but I think it's really, really shoddily put together. So I've been stopped in Texas before, and they have found a suspended license that I had from California when I kind of went through the same thing. And so what was interesting was the suspension lasts for a certain period of time. And even if it's like suspended because you didn't take care of a ticket, and even if you don't take care of the ticket, it doesn't matter. The suspension only lasts for a certain period of time. And what I found out is, you know, usually what they do is they say, well, if you want to get your license back, you have to pay like a fee to remove the suspension, and then you can reapply for your license. Well, what you can actually do, since there's a limit, and maybe it's different depending, like maybe Florida's a little bit different, but in California anyway, the limit on the suspension was a few years. So after a few years, you could actually call them and say, hey, your suspension is over. You need to take it out of your system, so that when I apply for a license in another state, they won't see it. And so I did that, and now Texas, whenever they stopped me and started doing their background checks, they couldn't find it. So they do have some sort of system, but, you know, I've been stopped and I've been sitting there, you know, and I'm happy to waste their time, because I'm thinking about, you know, how many other people are getting away with rolling through a red light and all this other stuff while they're harassing me. But, you know, they'll sit there and they'll do a background check for an hour, and all I give them is like my name, my date of birth. Sometimes I'll give them a passport, and, you know, sometimes they look at my VIN numbers, because I don't have any plates on there at all, or I haven't for about 10 years. And they, you know, they try to do the detective thing, and they, you know, they come up with something, they write me a ticket. But what's really interesting, because I don't acknowledge their authority, and because they don't have any jurisdiction by contract or anything, when they write you a ticket and you don't even have a license, you really can just ignore it, because it's like, what are they going to do? Suspend your license for not,
right.
You know, they don't issue arrest warrants, which is really interesting. And maybe that varies from state to state, but it's, you know, because they can't verify the person, maybe, you know, like you said, it's really interesting. But, you know, it's like, we're having different experiences, and there's not like, and especially in different states, there isn't a guidebook that tells you how to do this. And it really is like a cat and mouse game with these guys. They're always, you know, like you said, they're trying to, well, were you operating this motor vehicle? And you know, some people who just heard a little bit of this, oh no, I don't need a license, it's right to travel. Were you operating that motor vehicle though? Well, yeah, but I wasn't driving. And now it's like, you know, they do know some of this, and they do try to trick you. And it's
not only that, like, people sometimes have been like, you know, I've dated a few guys in the last few years that have all been like, oh, I'm just going to start doing that. And I'm like, no, you really got to know what you're talking about, you know? And they're like, well, fuck that. I'm not going to register my car either. And I'm like, you really should look into this and learn about it. And like, you really actually got to live it. Like, this last time, like, I definitely told those cops, I was like, do you guys know anything about Quakers? Like, I believe that I am a moral individual and that I can govern myself. Like, you know, what they found in my car, they searched my car and my backpack without asking me. And they found, you know, a homemade ID, which I had in there from years ago, because I had no ID for so long. Go ahead. And a homemade ID and, you know, a 3D printed anarchy symbol and a couple books about leading a powerful, positive, peaceful life and protein bars that I give to homeless people. You know, so I was just like, this is really how I live. And like, some of the people that I've talked to in the last couple weeks have been like, the one thing they can't own is your mind. And if you tell them, I don't believe what you're saying, I believe in this. I don't believe in your authority. I don't believe in your system of violence. I believe in this over here. Like, it's very powerful, you know? And what can they say to that, you know? Right. I mean, it's another layer of, like, you know, I'm over here outside of all that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So I want to go back. There was a question asked by, I think it was Kevin. Yeah. And he's asking, because I guess he's getting ideas already. Can you speed? do you want to answer that?
I mean, you know, well, the only thing I know is, like, the prosecutor said there's people that are speeding that are getting paying more than you to get out of here. And,
I think the question is, like, and, you know, I actually saw a video of this the other day. It was a guy who was, he was a Moor, and he was stopped for speeding, but he was let go with a warning because he said, I don't have a license. Here's all the paperwork. And it was just like, you know, citations from court cases, and said, look, I don't have to follow. Like, those are recommended speed limits, which, depending on the state, even the laws will say that.
Yeah. Like, the thing is, like, to basically claim that you're a sovereign individual or a self-governing moral being, or, you know, these are my spiritual personal beliefs or whatever, you know, man's law doesn't apply to me, but I'm not trying to do anything dangerous, you know, like, I just drive the speed limit, I don't drink, I'm not trying to poke the bear, you know, so there's people out there that would go, and now they would file papers to, like, sue the department for stopping them for false imprisonment and stuff. Like, I don't need all, you know, like, my time is more valuable than that. I got better things to do.
Right.
But I mean, it's cool. Those cases are cool. Like, I like the data, and I like that other people are doing it. I'm just not going to do all that.
Right. What I thought was really interesting about that case, you know, it was, there were two interesting things about it. One was the cop almost kind of admitted that, like, you know, we have no power here. He said, okay, look, the next time you come through my town, could you just do me a personal favor and not speed?
Right on.
And he said, it was funny because he kept saying, and go the speed limit. And the guy kept saying the recommended speed limit, not the legal speed limit. Okay. And the cop kept saying, no, the required speed limit. And they just went back and forth like 10 times. It was hilarious.
I love it.
But it's like that. It's like the cops, you know, I say this one all the time. When a cop comes up to your window and he says, do you know how fast you were going? There's no right answer to that. You either say yes, and then you're guilty because you knew you were speeding, or you say no, and then he can say whatever speed he wants, and you can't challenge it because you didn't know how fast you were going.
All right.
They are really sneaky, and they've spent the last 100 years coming up with the, you know, the best things to say to you to get you to talk yourself into admitting that you're guilty. And then they'll give you the ticket and say, signing here is not an admission of guilt.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
It's all really, really fascinating.
It's been quite an adventure. I like the information you have. This is great.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, like, when I first started hearing about this, I was really skeptical because I grew up in California, where it was like, you know, my parents were like, oh, yeah, when you turn 16, you can get your license. And you know, the law, like, the law is the law, and all these rules you got to follow and all this stuff. You know, don't speed. I remember, man, when I was a kid, like, just like maybe 5 years old. And, you know, I'd be driving around, or my mom would be driving around, and I'd be in the car, and she'd say, like, oh no, there's a police. Make sure you put your seatbelt on. And we'd all go make sure we have our seatbelts on. And it was like, obey the law or something really bad is going to happen. And it's like, and then, so, like, I started hearing about this stuff, and I'm like, this is crazy. Cause I was into, like, fighting traffic tickets on, like, okay, let me see if I can find a sneaky way to prove that the cop, you know, had malfunctioning equipment, or he wasn't. Yeah. He wasn't pointing the radar at the right car and all this. And so I was like, this doesn't make any sense. But like, I started reading it, and I was like, but it kind of does make sense. And I have the same mentality that, you know, some of the statists have now, where they're like, okay, just show me a Supreme Court case. Like, if you can't find a Supreme Court case, there has to be one, right? This is a big deal. Why would all these people be getting licenses if you don't need to? And so I was kind of that mentality. And then it really took some of the experimentation. And like you, it took getting pushed to the point where they suspended my license and say, you know what? I just don't give a fuck anymore. I've got nothing left to lose. And really saying, I'm going to go, you know, because before that, it's like you have like a perfect credit score with the government. Why would you go and even ruin that by trying? Why would you want a permanent mark on your permanent record that says, oh, this guy's a criminal. Every time you stop him, make sure, you know, do a search for drugs and, you know, he's crazy. You don't want to do that. But at some point when you realize, hey, these guys are all nutcases anyways, these guys are all, they're coming up with these stupid rules that make no sense. They're telling us it's for our own safety, and they're out here driving like maniacs to catch us. At some point, you're like, this doesn't make any fucking sense. And so it's like, okay, so you're willing to challenge the system. You've got nothing to lose. And for a lot of people that I've met in the freedom movement, in any aspect of it, like even just, you know, minarchist libertarians, they get there, or even people who are protesting police violence, they get there, like they're all for government until government comes around and smacks them in the face for something. And then that's when they say, wait a minute, this is screwed up. This isn't the wonderful government that I thought we had. And right. That's where you get, like, you know, that's where you come from. That's where I come from. That's where a lot of people, like, really start to say, well, shit, this is wrong. We got to fix this. So.
Absolutely. So you have had no plates on your car for 10 years?
So, okay. I had.
Because I know people that have, like, a homemade plate that says, like, private property.
Private
not
property.
Commercial use. Okay.
So I had, let's see. I had one car that had, it had California plates that were expired, and I drove that in Texas and pretty much never got stopped for that. I think I got stopped once. That car, the kind of died on me, so I bought another car. And this other car, it had, I bought it in California, and in California what they do, a lot of states, the dealer, when an official dealer sells you a car, because there's a difference between a licensed dealer and just, you know, Joe Blow who's selling you a car. When it's a dealer, they print out like a paper plate that's registered with the DMV, and it's like a temporary plate. In California, they don't do that. So usually what they do is they put like an ad for the dealership in the back license plate. So I bought a car from California, I drove it out to Texas, and I just left that in there. And I had that in there for maybe 5 years until there was one police department that really started harassing me. And so I was like, okay, let me put something more official looking in there. So I printed out my own plate, which was like, you know, it was one of those ones that said private. It had, I actually like, this is like after Bitcoin started coming around. So I was like, let me create something where, like, you know, okay, I've got a private key, I've got a public key. And I made two sets of keys on it, right? So you would, the concept was, you'd have this QR code on your back license plate. You'd have one private key that you would keep in your glove box. So if you ever got stopped or you ever had to prove that the car was yours, that private key would allow you to decode the information in the QR code to prove that that was yours. And it would have your name and some other information. Otherwise, you could just read the QR code and you couldn't even tell who it belonged to, right?
Wow.
And then you had the other private key, which would be the private key that would allow you to transfer ownership. That was like this, like my car is the only car in that entire system. It was just like a little proof of concept I made. But I drove around with that for like another 5 years or so. And on that one, I only got stopped once, and it was by Border Patrol. And what was really funny about that was, so okay, because I was a little bit skeptical of the whole driving without a license thing for a while, what I did is I went to Mexico and I got a license down there, and I used that to drive in the U.S. because I was like, okay, I don't know if I could talk my way to a cop saying, hey, I don't have a license at all, but I don't need one. So I was using this Mexican license. Now I got stopped by the Border Patrol, and I was like, okay, I don't want to show him this. So he stopped me and he said, can I see your license? And I recognized that he was Border Patrol, and I was like, I got something better for you. And I gave him my passport, which luckily I had on me. And so he took it, and he ran it back, and he was like, well, you don't have any plates on your, or he said, I can't read the plates on your car. And this was in the middle of the night, so I figured he had to have, you know, maybe he had like some little scanner or something that didn't read the plates, or I don't know what he was doing. But he told me he couldn't read the plates, and I was like, that's an interesting way to say it. And so he said, you know, he's like, well, so what are we going to do? How do I know it's not stolen? Now, he's not traffic. He's not like, you know, highway patrol, right? It's not like he's there to give me a traffic ticket or anything. He's basically looking for illegal immigrants, drugs, and all this other stuff. And so so he's like, okay, well, how do I know this car isn't stolen? And I was like, well, I don't want to tell you how to do your job, but I mean, you could run the VIN number. And so he was like, yeah, well, I was getting to that.
They're bright ones, aren't they?
Yeah, right? So he goes and he runs the VIN number and he comes back and he's like, okay, well, I don't see any problems with this. And he gives me back my passport and he's like, but you better be careful because if Highway Patrol stops you, or what is it, DHS in Texas, if they stop you, they're not going to be so forgiving about not having a license. Now, what he was really saying there is he's a federal employee. He has no jurisdiction over whether or not I have a license. He couldn't give me a ticket on that if he wanted to.
Wow.
Because that's not his jurisdiction, right?
Yep.
So that was all really interesting. But yeah, it's like, you know, you can't even read the law and know how to handle these situations. Like there's a lot of trial and error. And of course,
yeah,
as we try this, you know, they're hearing about these too. They're going to, like, police go to conventions, they exchange secrets. I'm sure they know about a lot of us. And the things that we've done, and they're, you know, they're working on their strategies. Like, okay, if somebody says they're just, you know, right to travel, what do you say to them? And they're probably working on their rebuttals for that, which might have been like, but you were operating the motor vehicle, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a funny thing too about this last time with the possible stolen car. Like, so not only did I not have a license, registration, the plates weren't for that car, but also the title's not even in my name, you know, and it's not even, it's basically titled to a trust in Montana and then signed by the person that bought the car for me, who is now supposedly like in Uruguay, you know, and so, but like nobody ever like even questioned if it was my car.
It doesn't matter. Because if it's not reported stolen.
Yeah. I mean, and I basically, that was part of my scheme that I was doing with them was I was like, look, you guys, my whole life is illegal. Like, you know, I told them, I was like, that plate don't belong to this car. Like, I got the title at home, but it ain't in my name. I don't know where to find the guy that's on the title. Like, you know, what are you going to do to me? Like, you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's you know, when you have a theft crime, I can understand this if like they, you know, if they catch you in the act of breaking into a car, then they can say, well, obviously it's not reported stolen because the person doesn't know it's been stolen yet. You were just, you know, just trying to steal it. But when it's like, you know, when it's like you're driving down the road, and I mean, they could say hypothetically the same thing, but you need probable cause, and somebody driving a car that's not registered to them is not, like, that happens all the time. It's not probable cause that it's stolen.
A lot of people told me that there was no way that I was going to be able to get that car out of impound. And crazy enough, you know, I had a couple friends come with me to pick it up. And I was like, all right, you guys ready for this? And the guy walking behind me was like, I'm turning my camera on. And, you know, I walked in there and there's a lady at the desk. And I, you know, kind of just started random chatting and talking about whatever was in the office there. And didn't really give her a chance to, like, ask me a bunch of questions if she was thinking about it. I don't know. I didn't know what to expect, you know. So I just kind of was, like, chitty-chatty about whatever. And anything that she was possibly thinking about asking me, I just kind of was too chitty chatty to give her a chance while she's doing the papers, you know? And then the only thing finally when she was done is she looks up at me and says, is this car registered in your name? And I said, it's not registered. And she just looked at me like she didn't know what to say. And all right.
We don't have a procedure for that.
Yeah. She's like, okay. And so, just handed me my stuff. And I was like, see ya. You know, so, but nobody ever, like, questioned, like, the plates being from a different car and who owns the car. And I was just like, wow, this is great. So my best suggestions right now is out-of-state license, suspended, expired, whatever, and out-of-state plates. And if you can get, if you've got a car that's at least 10 years old and you register it to a trust or an LLC in Montana, you can get a permanent plate for about $400. And, you know, over the course of the last 10 years, I've spent less than $500, and most of it just went to that impound lot. So as far as licensing, registrations, inspections, I saved a lot of money.
That's really interesting. So when I was in California, there were actually quite a few people doing that, and I tried this in the beginning, which was to go to Nevada and register there because their fees were lower.
Okay.
And so what's really interesting is when I got stopped once in California, and this was with the Mexican license. So I guess it's not really related to the plates, but I would think it's the same thing. And I think I've actually seen this before in, like, you know, traffic stops with out of state plates. What the police will do is, so, and I looked before I started doing this, I looked at the laws in California and most of the other states will say you can drive with a foreign license. That means like that can mean a license from another state or a license from another country. And what they try to do is they tell you, well, you need to register your car here or you need to get a license here. And they won't stop and ask you, like, are you just driving through? Are you, how much? And like, at this one stop, I even told them I'm actually leaving the state today. I'm on my way out. I'm getting gas and then I'm hitting the highway. And they still told me, well, if you're going to drive in this state, you need a license in this state. So you're telling me if I'm just like, I'm on a road trip, I'm driving from like Oregon through California down to Nevada, you're telling me I need to get a California license for that? Do I need to get an Oregon license too and a Nevada license? Do I need to just drive around with 50 licenses on me? Is that what you're telling me?
Right.
It's complete nonsense. But like it's like they say, they're just doing their job. Their job is like they have this like procedure list that they've been trained to follow and they need to check off the boxes. And when they get to a box that they don't know how to check off and they don't know how to move to the next, to the next item on their list, then they're like, oh shit, what do we do? And that's when they get stuck there. And that's what, you know, sometimes they'll call in backup and it's not because they're afraid of you. And it's just because they don't know what the hell they're supposed to do next.
Yep.
Hi. Yeah.
Exactly.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah.
Hi.
Very, that's just, it's so interesting. And, it's good. Like you said, it's all like trial and error experimentation. Like I've gotten lots of messages from all over the place about this stuff and people are just sending me links and really long case studies and all this stuff. And I'm like, all right, I'll save this stuff, but really there's no real reason for me to just read it all right now, you know? And like, all you gotta do is you kind of gotta go with the flow if you get stopped, you know, and just do what you can based on that situation. And then after you get stopped, when you got to go to arraignment in between there, that's when you got to study a little bit if you need to know more information and kind of poke around at the other cases and stuff and see what's my best angle here or, you know, what can I do? So,
right.
You know.
What would you say is the best advice, whether you're going to follow this or not, or do it all the way or do it part of the way? What's your best advice to somebody when they get stopped by the police?
Well, you know, a lot of messages have been coming in about how do I get out of my speeding ticket? And
right.
I tried that and I got a ticket for no insurance and no registration. And I got fined and I got jail time and blah, 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 blah. And it was all because they have a valid license in that state.
Contract.
So, you know, I get a lot of these requests and I'm like, well, you can't have a valid license, first of all, like if you're even going to try anything. So, you know, we got a lot of people that moved to New Hampshire for the Free State Project, and I would suggest letting your license expire and getting a permanent plate from a different state or making your own private property plate. Those things actually do work in, it seems like, many cases. So, you know, there's lots of YouTube videos to check out, and, you know, whatever you can make work best for your situation out of the various options, like, I would say definitely give it a try. Not everybody has positive experiences. I have heard of people just, like, going to arraignment and them just completely ignoring your request for proof of jurisdiction. But I don't know if those people had licenses or not. I never really got a clear answer. So, you know, if you want to get into this, like, you'd have to probably go to a different state where you don't have a valid license. So come to New Hampshire. Because there's a lot of Liberty people here. We have almost 5,000 movers.
There's also, I've heard of people canceling their license by sending a letter to the DMV, but also sometimes they'll reject that. So that's, you know, it's worth the shot. They're not going to punish you for trying it.
Absolutely. There's, you can revoke and rescind your contracts. I have a friend, Christopher Gronsky. He has a website called destinationfreedom.org. You can attend his workshops. You could probably hire him for private consultations. Redress for Dummies is somebody I've been talking to a lot lately, and I did the show a couple weeks ago. There's also SEDM.org, which is more of like a do-it-yourself resource of information and paperwork. That stands for Sovereignty, Education, and Defense Ministry, SEDM.org. You know, Chris Gronsky, the first one I mentioned, he does work with things like rescinding your federal citizenship, getting a state citizenship, revoking contracts. He does all that good stuff. But there's also other resources that if you have more time and energy to research, you can get more information for less. But he will definitely help you for a fee. He's really good at it.
Awesome. And something I want to add to that is, you know, like you said, you know, people will come along after they get a ticket and say, how do I get out of this?
Yeah.
And you know, it's like, you need to kind of, if you're going to do this, you need to learn ahead of time what you're getting into and how to handle that. Because, I mean, you know, what you have as far as contracts, licenses, registration, all that, what you have at the time you get stopped and what you say to the police is all going to make a huge difference. You know, when it comes to what you're going to, how you're going to have to deal with this. So, you know, it's not something you want to wait until you get a ticket and then figure out how to say, oh, but I wasn't driving afterwards. You really need to understand what's going on and do all this ahead of time. And
yes.
It is people a lot of
ask that. And they're like, oh, well, if I just use these words, I'm like, no, you can't just use the words. You got to really know what you're talking about and you got to live it. And be
right.
Like, this is what I believe. I am not part of your system, and this is why, you know?
And you have to understand, too, like, you know, police are usually trained to escalate things. And I've seen some videos where some people try to say, like, you know, I'm a free inhabitant and get out of, and the cops are like, get out of the car. And they escalate things while the police are trying to escalate things. And then the person, the traveler is also trying to escalate things. It really turns into a big mess and people get hurt. So, you know, you are dealing with a very dangerous type of person, the police officer of the state. So you need to kind of be conscious of that whenever, you know,
that's why I decided, when I was on the highway by myself with no camera on or anything, and they told me to get out of the car, I was like, all right, you guys, look, like, I got out of the car because I've seen people get pulled out of cars and I don't want to get pulled out of the car, you know? So I chose not to do that. But I was like, look, you guys, I don't agree to this, system of violence. And, you know, I don't even understand what you're saying half the time. So I just made them really aware that I don't believe what you believe, but I see that you have a gun.
Right.
That's what I was trying to get at.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's one other question I want to address here, and that's that's, does this work in other countries like Mexico? And I, you know, what's really interesting about this, so I've been spending most of my time in Mexico for the past 2 years. And no, it's not because I'm a fugitive from justice in the U.S. I go back there all the time. But what's really interesting is the people here understand, generally speaking, that the government is a criminal organization. And that when you get stopped by the police, you're getting extorted for money. Like, nobody here has the delusion like they do in the U.S. that, oh, well, it's just for my safety and it's to pay for the roads and, like, all this other crap. Like, nobody believes that. They know when the police stop you, it's a shakedown. Now, that said, you know, if you drive without a license down here, or if you drive without plates, or, well, if you drive without plates, you're just a target to get extorted. But when they stop you, it's really easy to say, look, I don't have any money, sorry, yeah, whatever. And sometimes what they do is they'll take the plates off of the car and they'll, you know, that's their way of extorting you to, well, if you want your plates back, you have to go, you know. But, you know, if you don't, I've been stopped down here without a license and anything else. And sometimes you give them like 10 or 20 bucks and they're happy to let you go because it's an extortion racket. But what's interesting is like their infrastructure of tracking, like, you know, in the U.S., as soon as, like, before they even turn their lights on, they radio it in and they read off your license plate if you have one, right? So it's all in this system. And then dispatch is like logging everything that's going on. Well, yeah. So if they take any money from you, like, you know, they're going to be later down the line, they're going to be like, well, did you give them a ticket? Why not? Did you have written documentation? Did you issue a warning? What's going on here? In Mexico, it's like, whatever. Like, nobody knows I ever stopped you. So if I take your money, if you try to turn me in later, like, I'm just going to say, I've never seen that person before. Like, it's like, it's almost like it doesn't happen. But so what's interesting is like, yes, it's still an extortion racket, but it's almost like in the U.S. the police are brainwashed that they're doing a good job, because in Mexico the police are extorting you and they get to keep the money. In the U.S. they don't even realize they're extorting you because they're just writing the ticket, and like it's this whole process where you have to go through all these different wheels are helping to extort you, and every single wheel is like, well, I'm not the one doing the extortion. It's just the law. I'm just following. I'm just spinning around in the machine. I'm just following orders. And it takes off all the responsibility from every, like, the judges, the police, the clerks, you know, everybody. It's really insane. So that's really interesting. But I'm sure, you know, other countries, like European countries, are more like the U.S., you know, especially like France. They've got, like, you know, everything's on the grid. They've got security cameras sticking out of every building and all that kind of stuff. So it's really interesting. But I think the less developed a country is, I was actually just in Uganda and the police were like non-existent there. So like nobody, they don't pull you over for anything. Like
wow.
Like, they don't even have, I don't think they don't even have that concept there. Except, you know, for like extreme circumstances. The only police I saw, they were giving like an escort with like five cars to, like, I think they said it was the wife of one of the representatives or something. It's really fascinating. But anyway, all right, I think usually I give you an opportunity to plug some websites. You already plugged a bunch of them. Is there anything else?
Definitely I'm open to new people sending me friend requests, no problem. Jessica Love. And like my business page on Facebook is Love Java Inc. That is CBD infused high performance butter coffee concentrate packs, basically magic in a cup. So for more information, you can check out lovejava.com at lovejava.com.
Awesome. All right. Thank you. Well, it's been great having you. This was an awesome conversation. Hopefully everybody learned some pretty interesting stuff. And until next time, taxation is theft.
Taxation is theft. Woo!
Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself. yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.